This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
The British Columbia government surprised many on June 11, 2012, when it announced a long list of changes to the province's welfare assistance program. Premier Christy Clark made the announcement, which was described as the first pillar of her family's first agenda, supporting vulnerable families. The government describes the changes and initiatives as designed to help build a stronger foundation for British Columbia families to help them become self-sufficient. Seth Klein of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives wrote at rabble.ca that the changes are good and long overdue, but that many of the changes are marginal and that most will impact very few people. Kasari Govender of West Coast Leaf said in a news release, "We are pleased to see these common sense changes to the income assistance regime. However, the real problem remains the lack of comprehensive poverty reduction strategy." A Times columnist editorial declares that the provincial government's changes to income assistance rules are positive, but fall far short of a real commitment to families first. We're joined on the phone by Kasari Govender of West Coast Legal Education and Action Fund.
Welcome to People First Radio, Kasari.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Kasari, the BC government made devastating cuts to income assistance in 2002, and this announcement that we're talking about today comes 10 years later. Give us some background here. What has happened over the past 10 years?
Well, the last 10 years have seen some more cuts and changes to many different aspects of the social safety net. And I think it's important to see these cuts, see social assistance generally, the scheme, the welfare scheme generally, in the context of the social safety net generally, because I think it really places it, you need to understand what other services are available to low-income people. So, for example, legal aid has been drastically cut back since 2002, particularly for the types of legal aid that women access, which is primarily family law legal aid. Poverty law legal aid has been completely eliminated since 2002. There's a housing crisis, particularly in the Lower Mainland and on reserves. There's been cuts to child care services. The government contributes less now to child care than it did in 2001, and BC's spending on child care is the lowest in the country. So there's quite a few cuts to the social safety net generally, but also some things haven't changed much, and that's also a problem. So, for example, social assistance rates haven't been raised since 2007, and in 2007 they were pretty nominal raises. And this is despite the ever-growing evidence that the rates are inadequate to meet even the most basic human needs, such as shelter and food and clothing and so on.
And it seems clear that the changes that Premier Christy Clark announced aren't going to erase the extent of the cutbacks that occurred over the last 10 years.
That's right. I mean, they certainly don't go far enough. These changes are... many of them are good news. There's one in particular that isn't good news. But a lot of the changes are positive, but they are really modest in the context of what's actually needed.
What are the good news items in this announcement? Who will particularly benefit and how?
So one of the really good news items is that the earnings exemption has been reintroduced for people on income assistance and raised for people on disability. So what that means is that people on those two, on the two different types of income assistance that we have in this province, will now be able to earn some money without it being deducted dollar for dollar from their income assistance. And that just makes good common sense, no matter what your ideology is, no matter what your perspective on poverty is, this will reduce, you know, poverty for people who are able to work, and certainly takes away the disincentive to get back in the workforce. Before there was, for people on income assistance, there was a dollar-to-dollar clawback of income assistance, depending if you made any money. And for people on disability, it's raised from $500 to $800. That's the exemption for the year. It's also been averaged over the whole year, so that for people who, have, for example, have chronic health conditions that might fluctuate throughout the year. When they're able to work, they can do so and get their exemption, and when they're not able to, they can take that credit and apply it to another month.
In your news release, you, Kasari, are quoted as saying, "We are pleased to see these common sense changes to the income assistance regime." And I think you're talking, when you talk about earnings exemption, you're talking about a common sense change. Something else that I read, I believe it was in the article at rabble.ca, the comment was made, if these are such common sense approaches, why weren't they implemented a long time ago?
Well, they're certainly common sense approaches, as I say, they're really just logical ways to ensure that our most marginalized citizens, have at least something to survive off of. I don't want to go as far as to say have an adequate standard of living, because that's just not possible off of existing welfare rates, but to have something and to really bring people into a position where they're able to move on with their lives. And this just gets us that much closer to that reality. The other really positive change that I think it's important to highlight is that women or parents without immigration status who are fleeing abuse but are not able to leave the country with their children are now going to be eligible for income assistance. And that is a change that we actually just, West Coast Leaf was just calling for. We just released a paper, a short position paper on this issue, and we're calling for that change. So we're really pleased to see that. We would have liked to see that apply to any woman fleeing an abusive situation, irregardless of whether she's a parent. But we are very pleased that at least that group of women as mothers is now able to access this benefit.
This is People First Radio, only on CHLY 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca.
Premier Christy Clark has announced a long list of changes to the province's welfare assistance program. She described the changes, which will cost the government just $5 million, as the first pillar of her Families First agenda, supporting vulnerable families. But the Victoria Times columnist wrote in an editorial that the changes fail any fair test of a commitment to helping families. The Times columnist points out that a single disabled parent raising two teenage children is expected to survive on $310 a week, less than minimum wage, and a single person considered unable to work by the government receives $151 a week, which is supposed to cover everything including housing. But anti-poverty activists welcome changes that now allow people on social assistance to earn a little money and keep it. And other small changes, despite helping relatively few people, have still been seen as good news and long overdue. We're speaking with Kasari Govender, Executive Director of West Coast Legal Education and Action Fund.
Kasari, just before that brief break, you were telling us about some of the needs of women that your organization have identified. Tell us more about some of the specific needs of women and marginalized groups and how BC's income assistance regime helps or hinders.
Sure. I think the starting point for this conversation has to be that women and marginalized groups are disproportionately living in poverty. And so income assistance as a whole and other aspects of our social safety net are really need to acknowledge that they are disproportionately aimed at women, Aboriginal women in particular, Aboriginal people, immigrants and refugees, people with disabilities, in particular women with disabilities, that women are still disproportionately poor in this country, which is really an unacceptable result in a country as wealthy and a province as wealthy as ours. So that's really the starting point. On the specifics, as I was saying just before the break, there is this issue of women who don't have immigration status in the country. So, for example, if they were being sponsored by a spouse and no longer being sponsored, and they're in the process of fleeing an abusive relationship, that group of women should really have access to work permits on an expedited basis and access to social assistance and other social safety services. So that's really some ways that income assistance impacts these groups in particular, and I think it's also important to recognize the ways in which Aboriginal people are particularly should be particularly targeted by anti-poverty programs because of the long-standing impact of colonialism on First Nations in this country. Aboriginal people are also disproportionately living in poverty, and income assistance needs to be tailored to their needs.
Now, we've quoted from the Times Colonist, and it was an editorial that appeared in the paper a couple of days ago, or perhaps it was yesterday. The editorial included the following. The welfare trap has snared some 36,000 children in British Columbia living in government-mandated poverty and starting life with limited opportunities and much higher prospects for undereducation, future health problems, and lifelong disadvantage. You have called, and many others in the anti-poverty community have called, for a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy. Tell us more about that.
When we talk about BC having the highest child poverty rate, what we're really saying in a way is that women have a high poverty rate. And that both of those issues are significant. But in order to address child poverty, we really need to address the poverty faced by women, because children are dependent on their families and often on their primary caregivers and single mothers for their survival, and certainly for their economic survival. So what we need to be looking at is issues like, for example, legal aid, so that women going through separation and custody and access disputes are not left destitute by legal proceedings. We need to be looking at adequate housing programs so that women and families and people living in poverty have adequate shelter. We need to be looking at child care issues. That's a huge one that often is left out of poverty discussions, but in fact has a huge role to play in ensuring that women are able to enter the workforce. We cannot be penalizing people for being out of the workforce when we have no means for child care, for public and accessible and safe child care that is equal and accessible for everyone. So it's really about a very holistic perspective on what will reduce poverty in this province, starting from children and moving up through adults.
Kasari, were you, as an individual, surprised when the Premier made this announcement?
I was, yeah. I didn't have any warning, and I understand from other folks working in this area that anybody had any warning on these. So it was a pleasant surprise, other than the fact that the 5-week waiting period was announced, which used to be a 3-week waiting period. Other than that, I was pleased, although, as I say, disappointed about that change and disappointed that they didn't go further.
Kasari Govender, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
Kasari is the executive director of West Coast Legal Education and Action Fund. Before joining West Coast LEAF, Kasari practiced constitutional, equality, and Aboriginal law. She earned her degree in law from the University of Victoria and her master's degree in international human rights law from the University of Oxford.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.